If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Thank you, Domiti. It's 1010 on WGN. This is Lou Manfredini's friend, John Williams. Nice to have you around. Andy Mazur filling in for us today. Andy, good to have you in the sports box.
Good to be here, John.
Yeah, let's talk a little basketball in just a minute. In fact, we've got a lot of things that we do and usually do on the show. We'll give you the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast 1 hour from now. The gang kicking around the results of a very, very weird statewide election. You'll hear that in about an hour. Producer Griffin has some things for you in the 11 o'clock hour as well. And we'll talk to Chris Jones from the Chicago Tribune, the theater critic, about a play in town that is resonating in ways folks never imagined. But before we do any of that, the big story, of course, this morning is what's going on at Union Park. WGN Radio's Pam Jones is there. And Pam, tell us a little bit about what's happening right now with the March for Our Lives.
Hi. Right now, hundreds upon hundreds of people are converging on Union Park, getting off school buses, getting off charter buses from all areas of the city and across the country, actually. I'm standing here with Howard Mandel, who is from Portage Park. He just put up a sign that says, Portage Park says no to racism and hate, says no to gun violence. Why, Mr. Mandel, was it so important for you to be here today?
Well, I want to be part of the nationwide protest that we have an overwhelmingly violent culture. I don't think that there's any reason for guns to be in such proliferation in this country. I'm not against the Second Amendment, but clearly there's no reason to have multiple firing of magazines and these hugely destructive implements of war, really. In our streets and attacking young people and older people, too, for that matter.
So basically, this is an event calling a very diverse crowd out here. I'm seeing people of all ages from all different types of backgrounds.
I was wondering about that, Pam. You know, it's been described as a teen or high school, you know, sort of organized event. And I know that a lot of young people will be there, but you see people of all ages, huh?
Of all ages, and again, of all different backgrounds. I've seen people, and when you talk about ages, from, you know, birth, basically newborns out here, all the way up. So, I mean, people are gathering together. They want to be part of this. They want to commemorate the event. Big groups are now taking pictures just ahead of the event, which starts at about 11 o'clock. But they want to mark the fact that they were here. They want to tell people across the country that they were here and send a message to lawmakers that they will not stand for gun violence any longer.
Yeah. So, Pam, is at Union Park. That's where Pitchfork is, right, Griff? That's where the concert is every year. And this is on West Randolph, on the west part of Chicago. They were talking, Pam, about maybe 30,000 people there, but it's hard to know in an inaugural event like this. Do you have any sense of how big the crowd is going to be?
It's a little too early, I would say, to tell.
You don't see no 30,000 people there right now.
Ain't no 30,000 people here right now, but we still have a long way to go.
Well, it does.
You know, 40 minutes is a long time.
Yeah, it starts at 11, and it's as I understand it, they're going to leave Union Park, just sort of do a loop, and then come back to Union Park for the rally itself.
Yes, and there is a heavy police presence just outside the park. Many crossing guards are available to help make sure that this process goes along smoothly. You know, there are all indications now that that is exactly what will happen.
All right. I'm going to check in with you in a half an hour and then certainly in the 11 o'clock hour when events are underway. Thank you, Pam.
Thank you so much.
Pam Jones, WGN Radio News at Union Park, 1501 West Randolph. They're doing marches today in Downers Grove, Elgin, Frankfort, Glen Ellen, Huntley, Oswego, Schaumburg, Vernon Hills, Highland, Indiana. The website is marchforourlives.com. The Twitter handle folks are using around here, if you're posting, is March FOL Shy. The Instagram handle is March for Our Lives, and the website is marchforourlives.com.
I'm a rambling guy. Well, I'm rambling round. I'm a rambling guy.
Here comes Loyola, a chance to win it. Towns into the front court. On the left wing, top to Ingram, three for the win. Good! He made it! second as the buzzer expires. The Loyola players storm off their bench. They're mobbing their teammate.
Well, I'm ramming, 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 ramming.
I got my Hogwarts scarf on. The maroon and gold scarf is around my neck. It's been there with me every day since I bought it, you know, way back Thursday. Andy, I'm such a Johnny come lately.
That's all right.
I'm such a bandwagon guy, but what the hey?
Yeah, you can admit it. That's half the battle right there.
Really, the real proof will I be there next year, you know, before they're back in the tournament again?
Yeah,
and I will be. Okay. I'm a college basketball fan.
I know you are.
Why are you laughing at me over there?
Who?
No.
Our producer, Griffin.
Ah, okay.
No, you, he's right. You admitted it. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the real problem is that this scarf doesn't go with anything that I have. Every time I've worn it, it really wasn't working. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
But that's all right.
A real fan wouldn't care.
Well, had I been there all season long, I would have dealt with this issue already. I would have had the wardrobe.
Yeah, you would have had the color coordinated outfit already.
Andy, are they going to win to this early evening?
You know, I don't see why not. I mean, really.
Might as well.
You know, they've
done Florida.
It. Yeah, they've done it in so many crazy ways, too. They have three different guys hit big shots late in games.
Yeah.
You know, Dante Ingram, Clayton Custer, and then Marcus Towns. So, you know, who's set up for tonight? I'm not really sure. I don't have that crystal ball. But, you know, this team that they're going to play tonight, Kansas State's kind of small and athletic as well. So it's a pretty interesting matchup because there's not a lot of height for either of these teams. And I don't think they've really needed it, although they've exploited some teams inside with the backdoor cuts and the backdoor plays.
Oh, man, how many layups?
There was a ton of layups against Nevada. Yeah. Game.
And Nevada's a team that smallest person, I think it was Kevin Powell pointed this out to us this week, was 6'7". The starting guard was 6'7".
Well, and the twins. They have twin the guards. One of the point guard is 6'7". His brother is 6'7".
I thought that was kind of sneaky.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that the rules should allow you to have identical twins because you're guarding a guy. You go, okay, I got the guy with the funny hair and the beard.
Uh-huh.
Wait, there's another one. Oh, my God.
And what if one of them gets into foul trouble and they change jerseys?
One was as good as the other. No, but
they were both very good.
Here's the thing. When I see, you know, the object of the game of basketball is to put a ball in a hoop that's 10 feet high.
Right.
Well, if you're about 10 feet high, it seems to me like you have an advantage over somebody that isn't. So
you would think.
Whenever teams line up, if they're thicker or longer than my teams, I always go, oh, we're screwed. We got no chance.
Yeah.
Because it's not who can be down by the floor. It's who can be up by 10 feet. And so I always just automatically write myself out of a game where I see that disadvantage. But I'm sorry. We just played the game better. We passed more. We back up. We had so many layups. It was amazing.
And you know, the funny thing about it is the strategy changed at halftime because the kid Krutwig, the freshman, was playing pretty well, then got into a little foul trouble, and the Loyola bench said, you know, we need to start the senior, Andre Jackson, here in the second half. And he scored 13 of his points in the second half, including a couple of big free throws late. So it seems like everything that they're doing is working out. I mean, they don't feel the pressure that I think the fan base and the older fans of this team feel because, as I've been mentioning all morning, 1963 is the last time they were in the Final Four, and they went on to win the whole thing against Cincinnati. And I don't think Porter Moser is really concerned with the history. It kind of almost reminds me of what the Cubs do in 2016.
Yeah.
You know, they were trying to ignore 108 years of history. You know, right now this team is trying to ignore 55 years of history, and you know, these kids and some of their parents, for that matter, weren't even alive at that time.
Oh, I think that was an advantage that the Cubs players had in 2016.
Yeah,
they didn't have a generation of angst built up
Correct.
About it. Some of them didn't grow up around here. Some of very few of them actually have been Cubs fans their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
So while they were really wanting to win and felt a lot of pressure, and some from the town, I think they would have felt the same amount of pressure if they were playing for Cleveland.
Yeah.
Or for that matter, somebody who hadn't been there, you know, if they were playing for New York or whomever. You know, there's a lot of pressure, but did they have the pressure the fans felt, Cubs players in 2016? No. It was harder for us than it was for them, the players themselves. And there's probably a little of that going on. These kids have probably been Loyola fans for a while, at least 3-4 years mm-hmm. now. But they aren't fans like some people have been for decades.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about this team is that those of us who have been fans for days.
Weeks, even.
This city so needs it. America needs it. It's so nice to have a double-digit seed in the Elite Eight.
It is.
You know, if you are for Kansas or Kansas State, if you're from that part of the world, you're probably rooting for K-State. Mm-hmm. Fine. I'm not going to blow out that candle. But the rest of the country really wants and needs and is enjoying the Loyola run.
Yeah, and now the world gets to experience Sister Jean, which is nice. She is a tremendous lady who has had a lot of impact on that program.
Yeah.
And these kids, I mean, these kids deserve it. I've seen them a couple times. I've done a couple of their TV games over the last 3 or 4 years and have seen them kind of grow and seen Porter Moser kind of mold this culture that he keeps talking about that is pretty evident when they take the floor. I mean, they practice late situation. They practice the final 4 minutes of a game.
Oh, yeah,
in practice.
Right. Yeah, okay.
So they're never surprised by anything because they've practiced being down 8. They've practiced being up 7. I mean, they've practiced all the scenarios. So when you get into it and you're actually competing in it, you just look back at practice and say, yeah, I know how to do this. We can handle this.
That's interesting. Yeah. It's 10:21. That's Andy Mazur filling in for Joe Brand this morning. Nice to have Andy here. Just one last thing. I want to see next year, and I don't know, it probably depends on how well the team does, if the Sister Jean story is going to stick around. But next year, I want to see that little horseshoe of analysts they have, Charles Barkley, and I want Sister Jean sitting next to him, breaking down the games. What are Jean's brackets?
Hey, she knows her stuff.
Evidently.
I mean, this is not a joke. I mean, she emails these guys scouting reports before and after games. She's like, watch out for number 10. He can shoot.
It's 10:21. Andy Mazur joining us this morning. News in 9 minutes. What's going on at Union Park, the March for Our Lives? Pam Jones says hi to us in about 10. We went to the Music Box Theater last night to see a movie called Keep the Change. Keep the Change is written and directed by a woman named Rachel Israel. The New York Times begins its review of it this way. This is a landmark motion picture, a movie about people living with autism, in which all of the characters who have autism are portrayed by non-professional performers who also have it. They say that the movie grows as it goes. Keep the Change is not a seamlessly crafted movie, but it's awfully tender-hearted and thoroughly disarming and deserves to be widely seen. And I agree. Griff, you saw the movie with me last night. Did you like that movie?
I loved it.
Griff says, let's go to this movie. It's a love story about people with autism. And I thought, let's not. What a great movie. It's called Keep the Change. It's about a guy who has autism. And throughout the movie, whenever he's buying something, he says, keep the change. I think he has an issue with change, or maybe he has a lot of money. But either way, keep the change is a metaphor. It works more than just about cash. And it's just so funny. And it's so... When's the last time you saw a candid discussion about autism or about anything by people with autism?
But the love story kind of comes first. It's not about their condition only. It's about their lives as well. It's not about, you know... It's about people that you don't usually get to see on screen, but not about the reason that you don't get to see them on screen.
I think that's a really good point because I said it's a movie about autism. It's really a love story about it's a love story, and the characters happen to have autism.
Yes.
They talk about their condition a little bit, but not much.
The performances are so natural in a way that it's just it's a joy to watch everyone on screen. It was surreal.
And the acting is really good. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so good. At one point, I thought, wait a minute. Are these professional actors who have figured out how to play somebody with autism?
I think you would be able to tell.
And, there's a TV show right now where that's happening.
Yeah.
You know,
it's almost always the case. And a lot of people get lauded for those performances, but it's extra special to see what's happening here. And you can tell and you can feel it. And it's the reason this movie is a joy.
It's only got 18 reviews, but it still has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Keep the Change at the Music Box Theater. This is so funny. So we all sit down to the theater, and it's at the Music Box. It's in the smaller venue. And there's not that many people in the theater early on, you know, before the movie starts. And there's four people that sit down right in front of us. And we're all chatting away. And finally, the woman, just amongst ourselves, and the woman sitting in front of me turns around and she says, excuse me, but I have to ask you a question. Usually this is where they say, are you John Williams? And I think, oh, yeah, I've been way too loud. I need to shut my yapper. And she goes, but could you tell me, what is your motivation for seeing this film? That's not something you normally hear before a movie starts. Yeah. A complete stranger turns and says, excuse me, but could you tell me, what is your motivation for seeing this film? She wondered if we were autism advocates or were somehow connected to it. And we said, no, we live in the neighborhood and we heard this is a pretty good movie. We're here for a show. I say, where are you from? She says, Wheaton. We drove all the way in, which is what people from Wheaton say when they come into the city. And I said, well, why are you here? And she said, my daughter-in-law, Rachel Israel, is the writer and director of this movie. We have to see it. She was also sort of indicating that we have to see it so we can say we saw it. But she was there to see it. And when the movie was done, I patted her on the shoulder and I said, that was really good. And I thought it really was. But, you know, I was sort of feeling the movie for her a little bit, because I thought, if this isn't really good, or if it's a clunker, I'm going to be sorry for her and sorry for the movie. It's not. If you want to try something different, march for, I'm reading two pieces of paper, Keep the Change is at the Music Box. It's 10:29. Domitee's got your news coming up next. Thank you, Domitee. 10:38 WGN, John Williams downtown in our Michigan Avenue studios in the Allstate Showcase studio. Andy, make sure I understand this now.
Yep.
The baseball season for the White Sox starts Thursday.
Thursday.
This Thursday?
This Thursday. Every team is opening up on the 29th of March.
Golly. And they're playing in Kansas City. Is that an outdoor stadium?
That's an outdoor stadium.
I'm going to look for the forecast for that.
Yeah, they always have an off day built in.
Yeah, right.
For that first series, so right. The off day will be Friday.
And then the home opener is
the following Thursday, the 5th, and they'll be taking on the Detroit Tigers again with an off day built in the next day.
Present and future, they have on the front page of tomorrow's Chicago Tribune pictures of Anthony Rizzo and of who's the fireballer here? Michael Kopech for the White Sox, who isn't even going to start with the club as the season begins. But there's the present and there's the future, the two big teams in town. It's 10:38 on WGN Radio. Our Pam Jones is at Union Park watching the rally ready. Pam, what are you seeing now?
Oh, my goodness. I'm seeing several thousand people who are gathered here in the middle of a park listening to music. I mean, it's definitely not a party atmosphere. I think the music is more to keep people pumped up and warm out here. We've got a pretty brisk wind blowing all the series of Illinois flags that I'm seeing right now. I mean, they're really whipping in the wind. I'm not quite sure what the wind speed out here, but I'm telling you, that real field temperature has got to be pretty low at this point. But the crowd knows that this issue is important to them, and they are remaining energetic at this point. Signs everywhere, you know. I mean, people are carrying signs with just about every type of anti-gun, anti-violence message that you can imagine out here. And again, the crowd is quite diverse. People of all ages and from all different backgrounds getting here however they can, on school buses, on charter buses, in private cars. I'm seeing license plates from all over the country at this point. It's actually, you know, it's a pretty, pretty amazing sight to see all these people coming together for this one cause.
I noticed the Northwest and South suburbs all have similar March for Our Lives rallies, but I guess Chicago's going to be the big one, and that's where folks are congregating, huh?
Yes, I talked to Howard Mandel a little bit earlier, also his wife, Joanne Caywell. They come from Portage Park, which, you know, in the news business, we know that that area has a high concentration of residents who are police officers and firefighters, first responders, who they say are also against the type of gun violence that we're seeing on the streets right now. You know, many of them obviously not against the Second Amendment, but just want to see, you know, more sanity on our streets, more peace. And so they thought it was important to come out. They're both senior citizens. I mean, you know, I talked to them about the issue of this event being mainly a youth event, or being billed as a youth event. But they're saying, you know, people of all ages are being affected by this violence and they want to see an end to it. So they thought it was important to be here today.
Pam Jones is at Union Park, West Randolph in Chicago. All right, I'm going to check in with you certainly a little after 11 o'clock, maybe earlier, Pam, but keep doing what you're doing and we'll be in touch, okay?
Awesome. Thank you.
Pam Jones from WGN Radio News at 10:41. By the way, there's a play in town at the Goodman Theater I just wanted to mention here because Neil Steinberg wrote about it so well in the Sun-Times this week. Neil Steinberg, in fact, described going to see the play called An Enemy of the People at the Goodman. And on the way, he said in his column this week, he walked by a terrible scene, a dead body being tended to by police. This was either, he guessed, the result of a drunken slip or an intentional leap from a high rise. It was St. Patrick's Day. And so he snapped a photo of the scene and contemplated sharing it on social media. And then he decided not to. And he wrote in his column, quote, "Why add a note of indifference, if not mockery, just so I can flash sardonic?" It was a moment of empathy or sympathy for Neil Steinberg. And then he wrote this. People can be divided into roughly two types. And this is how he wrote. This is, if you will, his review of an enemy of the people. He said, there's two types of people, those who sympathize and those who don't. Those who can shift their perspective away from themselves to contemplate the condition of someone else, and those whose well of sympathy is drained dry. The play we were seeing, he continued, An Enemy of the People, reflected this. Last year, after Donald Trump called the media the enemy of the people, he was no doubt unaware of this play, where the phrase is wielded against Dr. Thomas Stockman. And then he tells you the story of Dr. Thomas Stockman. Here's the story. Dr. Stockman is the medical director of a resort town's spa. He discovers that the water is poisoned by the local mills and sounds the alarm. Confident that the townsfolk will understand the gravity of the situation and act immediately, Dr. Stockman has an inflated moral certainty of his scientific knowledge. The water is poisoned, he says. And he proceeds to browbeat the town residents who depend on tourists visiting the spa. He exalts stupid people, puts stupid people in control, and the rest of us suffer for it. The townsfolk don't warm to this path of persuasion, and Dr. Stockman is lucky to escape with his life. Still, we don't sympathize with him. In the end, he's another one of the stupid people messing things up. He never pauses to even try to consider the viewpoint of his neighbors. The doctor is fixated not so much on keeping people from being poisoned as with exposing their folly. You follow? Put another way, he wrote, when Donald Trump is reelected in 2020, I will reflect ruefully on the lesson of an enemy of the people, a lesson about empathy ignored on both sides, wrote Neil Steinberg in the Sun-Times this week. I saw the play, too, and I could not agree with him more. If you just translate that into what's happening these days and how both sides don't seem to find the middle on anything about the president or this administration or politics these days, and even the people on the left who are certain that they have science and ethics on their side, whatever, the truth, journalism, anything, pick it. They feel that they've got everything that they need on their side. But browbeating the other side with it isn't working. Both sides have to find some measure of empathy. And this play was written 100 years ago. And when I'm watching it, I'm thinking this could be written about climate change today or the presidency today, and how the two sides, without any willingness to see the other side, don't get anywhere. The play is at the Goodman, and it's called An Enemy of the People. It's a line that literally the president used to describe the media in an offhand way, maybe in a deliberate way, earlier this year and last year as well. And Chris Jones in the Tribune gives it 3.5 stars, says, go see this play. It's 10:45 on WGN. 10:49 on WGN. This is John Williams at 11 o'clock. We'll update you on the latest news. We'll also do the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast. Some real smart folks sit down with me on Thursdays. We record a conversation with them. They had a lot to say about the election that took place this week on Tuesday, the results and some of the contested results. It's a very interesting conversation. And Steve Bertrand also brought up something that I thought was kind of curious, and that is, as he reports the story of one of the candidates, how do you describe that candidate? That's all coming up a little after 11 o'clock here on WGN Radio. Hey, if you are at the rally or any of these rallies, or your kids are at any of these rallies, feel free to text or call this morning. The rally is supposed to begin or kick off around 11. I just heard from somebody that was there, and they said that it's, what did this text say, that the march probably won't start until around noon. So they're going to be there for a couple of hours today. If that's you or someone you know, 312-981-7200. Just pop in here, 312 981-7200. I'm just also following this storm, this winter storm. It's hard to believe as we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio downtown Chicago that some of you might see closer to a foot of snow in the sound of this voice. LaSalle County, 10 inches maybe. And I think Domati said earlier that some of you are already getting some snow. Really? If you are, I need a report because some of us are traveling this weekend. So 312-981-7200. If you're getting some weather right now, please call in 312-981-7200. You can text to that number as well. We'll continue to follow both of those stories. And America will continue to follow the Loyola Ramblers as we get ready for that game this evening. We don't broadcast the games on this radio station. But Dave Plyer, one of our guys here at the station, we were talking about it yesterday, Griff. I said, are they even on the radio? He said, I don't know. So he Googled Loyola Ramblers Radio, and the first entry that comes up is WGN, because we, all of us Johnny-come-latelys have been following it so deliberately. A lot of phone calls coming in here, so we'll just pick up a couple of lines, particularly if you're doing any traveling today and are heading south and west. You are going to run into some of, I guess, what some of you are getting. I'm also interested in what it's like. Literally, I'm sitting downtown, and a lot of times these rallies are at Millennium Park or Grant Park, usually, and so we see the crowd streaming there. But since it's west of downtown on Randolph, we don't see what's going on. Let's talk to Paul for a second. Hey, Paul, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hey, well, how are you?
Good. Where are you? What's going on?
Oh, I just dropped my family off and my neighbors at the event, and I was just amazed at how well-run it was. There's a big showing of police and firemen. It just seemed like, you know, it was very peaceful, and at the same time, the city's completely prepared with, police on bikes or all that stuff. So, so far, a really good scene. A lot of people are coming off public transportation. And I was surprised, having dropped them off, how little traffic there was with everyone just getting there a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Boy, so you just don't know what to expect on something like this. Who is the driving force on this? You said your family. Who was it that said, hey, we've got to go to this, and why are they there?
The kids were. And I think, you know, the moms in the neighborhood were pretty, instrumental in making sure the posters got done. But, you know, this is about the kids. I think the fact that kids organized this whole thing throughout the country is, you know, for my generation, is pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, my generation could not have pulled this off, I promise you.
Right, and it's not just social media skills, right? I mean, it's the ability to organize and mobilize and use that medium in that way, so.
And, you know, really, you're right. We didn't have Facebook when I was a kid, but, I mean, we didn't have the reason to rally like this either. There just was... I know too many people who have been to too many different rallies for women's rights, for voter rights, for immigration issues, to stop gun violence. It just, in 1977, we weren't doing this. We weren't even talking like this, you know?
Right. And aside from what side people fall on, it just underscores how big the divide is.
Yeah.
That makes people come together to try and figure it out.
Yeah, I appreciate you listening. Good luck to your family today.
Yep. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thanks, Paul. I asked for you to tell me what's going on, and we're getting weather and rally reports. We'll go to Liam. You're on WGN. Hi, Liam. How are you?
Oh, hi. I'm good. How are you?
Good. How old are you? Where do you go to school?
I'm 13, and I go to St. Paul in Canfield right now, but I'm going to go to St. Pat's in Chicago.
Why are you heading to the rally?
Just to support all the kids down there.
Down in Florida, in other words.
Yes, down in Florida.
Who are you going with?
I'm going with my mom right now. We're in the car. We're on the highway.
Yeah, right. So you live in Chicago, but you're heading up, are you, to Union Park?
Yeah. No, up to Downers Grove.
Oh, you're from Downers Grove and you're coming in. Are some of your friends coming in as well?
I don't think so. I asked a couple people at my school, but they said they weren't going to go, so I was kind of... disappointed, but I'm going. So
yeah, good for you. So you said, Mom, I want to go. She said, all right, we're getting up Saturday and heading in, huh?
Yep.
Liam, you got our phone number. Feel free to call in. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Okay, thanks for having me.
You bet. Have a good day. Good luck. Hey, Bob, you're on WGN. Are you downstate? Where are you, man?
Well, right now I'm almost into Carlinville, but I've been driving on I-55 going south, and from Pontiac Streeter all the way south of Bloomington Normal, it was really nasty. In fact, just north of Bloomington Normal, there was probably 4 or 5 inches on top of the cars, and there's cars all over in the ditch and everything else. It was really rough driving through there. But
I'm so sorry to hear that.
It's been all rain. It's been all rain. All
really?
Yeah. As soon as I got to, I'm going to say Atlanta, it was solid rain, and boom, that was it.
I'm sorry, as soon as you got where?
The town of Atlanta, I think it was called. Like, yeah. That's what I saw on the exit.
Illinois, but in other words, south of Bloomington Normal.
South of Bloomington Normal, correct. Yeah, yeah. It was solid rain.
Yeah, this is what I needed to hear. Hey, Bob, thanks for the help on that.
All right, take care.
Yeah, drive safe. I'm glad you're doing all right, not in the ditch. Sue, where are you? What are you running into? Hi, Sue. Are you there?
Yes, I'm sorry. I didn't hear my first name. I'm down in Carmel, Indiana, former Chicagoan, and I'm looking out the window, and I can see about a block and a half away. And this is probably the first good snowfall we've had all year, because we've only had about 8 inches down here. So anyone coming down I-65, that would be the corridor going down south.
Yeah, heading towards Indianapolis, for instance, today you're going to run into it, huh?
Yes. Yeah.
Watch out. Sue, thanks for the phone call. And real quick here, Diana, you're on WGN. Where are you, Diana?
Good morning, John. We just finished up the Schaumburg Northwest Suburban March. It started at 9 o'clock this morning. And it was very well attended. It was pretty cold, but it was very well attended, and so impressed with all the kids and just pulling this off. It's fantastic.
I'm curious to see who speaks at the Chicago rally here, Diana. Was it students, or were the politicians and mayors and principals speaking as well? What was the program like?
They had students speak. They had teachers speak, and a local politician.
Yeah.
From somebody who protested in the Vietnam era, it was very uplifting to see the kids so involved in this, and obviously it affected them personally, you know.
Diana's in Schaumburg saying the rally's over there and it went well. Diana, thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
I appreciate you joining us. We've got more news coming up on WGN. Thank you, Domati. Domati and I have both been watching not only the coverage on TV of the Washington, D.C. rally, but Domati, I just saw the overhead of where our Pam Jones is, and where at first the crowd didn't sound very big, it's getting really big at
Union Park.
Yeah,
it's getting packed fast.
In Chicago. Pam is there now. Give us a scene setter, Pam. So what's going on now?
Oh, my goodness. Tens of thousands. I obviously can't count, but they have several entrances, and I'm seeing tens of thousands at the one entrance where I am. It's basically gridlock at some of the areas where I imagine they're checking bags and things like that, making sure that this event is a safe one. We're seeing all kinds of signs from people of a very diverse background. One of them, not one more, put the guns down. Give this teacher supplies and not guns and bullets. Kids over guns, grandparents against guns. All these people from all over the country, all over the Chicago area, coming together to support this one cause because they want to see peace on their streets, not violence.
Yeah. It's 11:10 a.m. It was supposed to start at 11. Do you get the sense they're delaying the start of it just because folks are still streaming in?
Yes, yes. I mean, they still have so many people on the outside that are just trying to get into the fenced-in area. It's just incredible. That's the only way to describe this, that, you know, they have marches going on, again, as you've said, all over our area, and these people decided to come to Union Park. They're not at Grant Park. They're here at Union Park. It's absolutely incredible to see this number of people here.
Pam Jones is at Union Park on West Randolph in Chicago. Pam, I'll check in with you again in a little bit. Keep us posted, all right?
Thank you, yes.
Says 11:11 now on WGN. John Williams here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, downtown Chicago, where it's not snowing. Thanks for the calls. I've heard from some of you who are in Northwest Indiana, Central Indiana, and North Central Illinois who are going through the kind of snow that's putting cars in ditches. One of you called and said, when you get south of Bloomington Normal again, it's rain, but Between here and there, you're going to go through some bad snow and some bad roads. We're keeping you posted on that, too. We record on Thursdays at WGN Radio, a podcast we call The Mincing Rascals. I hope you listen to it if you're a podcast listener. You should be. You can listen to it at WGNRadio.com online, but it's easy to find the podcast, The Mincing Rascals. It features Christian McQuarrie, Eric Zorn, and Scott Stantis from the Chicago Tribune, our Steve Bertrand, and me. Now, this week, we recorded it on Thursday. We actually did a special one on Wednesday as well, but all of our attention was pointed to Tuesday's election. And before we go to the Rascals, here's 15 seconds of the most controversial commercial that took place in this election cycle. It was that ad that Jeannie Ives, the Republican candidate for governor, running against the incumbent Republican candidate, of course, Bruce Rauner. But against him, Jeannie Ives ran this ad.
We want to say thank you.
Thank you, Bruce Rauner.
Thank you for signing legislation that lets me use the girls' bathroom.
Thank you for making all Illinois families pay for my abortions.
Thank you, Bruce Rauner, for opposing law enforcement and making Illinois a sanctuary state for illegal immigrant criminals.
It hit a lot of hot-button issues, didn't it? And some of the imagery was startling and upsetting to people. It was an aggressive, strong ad. And the question I asked the gang was, and Kristen was the first to answer, did this ad help or hurt her chances?
Can I say both? Can I say both that it helped wake up the electorate to who she was, because outside of Chicago, nobody knew who Jeannie Ives was. But I think the support for Rauner, people held their noses and voted for Rauner, even though he barely won, because there was a discomfort with her putting that out there and then, considering her viability for November.
So it was kind of like a fatal potion. It got her to the lip of success, but also prevented her from reaching success
of her campaign.
I think so. I mean, I think by the time voters got into the voting booth, they sort of had forgotten about it. And if you pick apart the ad in its entirety, there were only a couple. I mean, it was actually mocking Rauner's positions on a lot of these bills that Republicans, by and large, did not support. But, you know, just like I've written some things that have been misinterpreted, or I used a metaphor that did not work in a Hurricane Katrina column, and I have to own that. I feel like she sort of has to own the tone.
She stood by that. She never said that was a misrepresentation.
No, she didn't.
Of her views or her tone, she didn't back away from any of it.
That's right. But I think it was when you have to spend, as she did, 5 or 6 days after that first aired, explaining it, that's not a successful political ad,
okay,
in my opinion.
So here's the only question then. Would she have had more votes without that ad?
No, actually, I don't think so.
See, I think
that's the thing. It helped her. So, I mean, when we kicked this around the other day, I said it hurt the party, it hurt the state, it hurt the people, it hurt her. It helped her. It helped her, I think. I'm just sorry that that's the tactic that she would resort to.
I disagree. I disagreed with this yesterday. I think that she was making some inroads. She had done very well in the debate at the Tribune. It was like, no, it's not official debate, when she squared off with Rauner. And there was a better way for her to introduce herself as a strong social conservative than to frighten some of these moderate Republican voters into thinking she was a whack job. And I think it did cost her votes. I'm not necessarily positive that it would have moved 10,000 votes either way. But I think that was a tactical mistake. And if she says she wouldn't do it again, then her political acumen is...
So you say hurt her. At the end of the day...
At the end of the day, I think it hurt her.
Hurt her. I say helped her. You say probably helped her mm-hmm. as much as we don't like it.
I'm going to do a hybrid because I think it did help her, but I think it probably also was a catalytic converter, which prevented her from getting the vital support she needed.
See, that's my Sarah Palin. Do you understand my analogy? I think that John McCain's campaign was never going to be as successful as it was were it not for Sarah Palin. But Sarah Palin also ensured that he wouldn't win.
That's kind of what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
There was a limit to her reach, and she started to overstep it towards the end of the campaign.
Well, there was a limit to her reach that she overstepped when she accepted, but we didn't know about it.
Andrea Rayla, does she get a do-over?
She should. I don't see how, if this goes through the court system, how she could not. I mean, she followed the election code. There is a timetable that doesn't work within the state law that lawmakers write, because, of course, it helps incumbents. But she was a challenger. She had every right to try to fight to stay on the ballot. And the fact that they kept screwing up at every turn, did, there's no way you could argue that she, her due process rights were not violated.
What is the standard, though?
I don't know if she has to prove that her success was hampered or that her just due process rights were violated.
She couldn't get a do-over if she proved that only one voter was turned away,
but
right? So there must be a standard.
There's no way to prove it because early voting started weeks. She already lost out on all the early voting because at that point she was off. Then she was on, but there were the signs put up in polling places saying don't vote for her. I mean, election authorities screwed up. The state law doesn't work. It doesn't let you get through the whole appeal process before election day comes around.
So, yeah, but I have the same question Steve does. What is the standard for having a new election? Because I haven't heard of this happening elsewhere where someone gets a new election because there were irregularities in the voting process.
Well, you can't prove a negative in this, though, Eric. I mean, you could say, Steve, Eric, that she didn't really get that many votes, but how do we know,
about the votes that she didn't get? But if you're a judge, there's got to be some standard by which you
decide. She got one vote, but in theory, a million people would have voted for.
If this were T.O. Hardeman and he got 1% of the vote, you'd just say, well, hey, you know, those are the breaks, T.O., right? Because he's but and in this case, it's an interesting call because she got 20% of the vote, more or less, right? And Fritz Kagi got 45% of the vote. If this were really close, if they were within a couple thousand votes of each other, the democracy itself would absolutely demand a do-over. At this point, I don't know what the law is. I don't know what precedent is on getting a new election. Clearly, though, I mean, I agree with Kristen. She got hosed. I mean, there's no way around it.
How onerous is a re-election anyway? A re-vote for that specific race?
Oh, it'd be very expensive. Opening up all the precincts?
I don't know.
Millions of dollars.
What do you care? It would cost how many dollars?
To do another election?
For just that one race?
Well, I mean, they have to do everything except to have fewer dots on the ballot.
Yeah,
I mean,
we're all going to go to the polling places.
Throughout all of Cook County.
If you pulled a Democrat ballot, you're now going to be asked one question. Which of these three candidates do you want to be Cook County assessor?
So you have to vote, and to vote in the do-over, you have to prove you voted.
She doesn't know the answer to that question. Is everybody eligible to this or only people that voted
previously?
Well,
that's a really good point. Well, because you could have argued that they came into the polling place, saw the sign, and then decided not to
because they were told they couldn't vote for the candidate of their choice.
Okay, so she was on with you and was demanding a federal investigation.
Steve, I want to insert this. We're talking about the Cook County Assessor's Office. Joe Berrios is the incumbent. There's Fritz Kagi and Andrea Rayla. Rayla, as Kristen pointed out, was the object of flyers that were posted by the governing body of the election saying she's ineligible.
Either mistakenly or takenly.
I think it was an honest mistake.
On election day, it was a mistake. Before during early voting, it was accurate for much of early voting. It was accurate. And then partway through early voting, about a week ago, maybe a week ago Tuesday.
6 days before the election.
Are you super sure that some of these Democratic bosses who were done with Berrios didn't want those flyers up?
No, we're not sure of anything. But in her, so she went to court on election day saying, number one, she wanted a restraining order on the election, which is obviously not going to happen. Number two, she wanted the election results to be void. That's not going to happen. But number three, she wants a special election. She also is still not she's still not through the process. She got to the appellate court. The appellate court said, put her back on. Kagi could go back and appeal that. Like she still needs to get a ruling that she deserves to be on the ballot. But if she gets that, then I think they have to call a special election.
Currently, that's where she is. But Kagi could appeal that, and the higher court could yet say, in fact, she should not have been on the ballot.
Correct.
Let's just put the three names on the ballot and do a do-over. Would the results change?
Well, first of all, you'd have just one election, so you're not going to get even the pathetic turnout that we have at primary elections. You're going to get an even much, much smaller turnout.
It would help Berrios because he'd be organized.
It would help those who are
Berrios could win a do-over.
Well, and you're functioning. The campaign is drawing toward election day, and it's geared up toward momentum and all of that to then have people vote on another day.
If you are going in to vote and you want to vote for Andrea Rayla, and they hand you a sheet of paper that says it won't count, that's game over. In Cook County, you were also asked if you want marijuana to be recreationally legal. 68%, 7 out of 10, said, yeah, let's have legal recreational marijuana in Cook County.
These advisory referendums are silly. I wish everyone just voted no so that they would stop doing it. They put an advisory referendum on. I've never really seen an advisory referendum directly lead to legislation. It's actually a way to take up space on the ballot so a legitimate question couldn't be further there. I don't remember how that one was worded.
It was leading, is what it was.
They were all loaded to me. You know, it was like, do you want health care for poor people, or do you want to kick them out into the street and watch them suffer and die?
Freedom-loving Americans. Yeah. Yeah.
They're just silly. Was I surprised?
By the way,
no.
That was the exact wording of one of the referenda. It was exactly what you just said.
I know.
But that's kind of the way they're
still
worded.
I think legalization is inevitable. We're on the road to it. An overwhelming majority of Cook County voters, 3 in 10 who showed up, thought it was a good idea. J.B. Pritzker, in his first interview with Cranes afterward, brought up the money that would be raised by legalizing marijuana. So, I mean, I think it's going to happen.
Robert McCoppin wrote a piece about this, and he said it depends on how you ask the question. If you do it the way they did on the ballot, 68% of the people say, yeah, I like recreational marijuana. I've already got legalized it for medical purposes. But then if you ask it in a different way, you can get a number as low as less than 25%. You know, it just depends on how the question is put and are other questions asked around it that sort of shape the opinion of the person. So I really don't know what people think.
People certainly medically benefit from it, anxiety-wise.
I'm for medical
marijuana.
We have
that. Okay. We have medical.
I mean, do you benefit from your cocktail at night?
I enjoy it, sure.
Okay, so, I mean, I think people would benefit from a brownie, too.
But the world would be better if there wasn't vodka.
Really? I like it better after you've had one.
Thanks a lot, Steve Bertrand. They not only like it that I drink, but they like me better when I do. It's 11:22 on WGN. That's the Mincing Rascals, the podcast that we record on Thursdays. I invite you to listen to it in its entirety. The Mincing Rascals are also posted at WGNradio.com. Thank you, Steve Bertrand, Krista McQuarrie, and Eric Zorn. It's 11:22. Our Pam Jones is at the March for Our Lives rally in Union Park in Chicago. We'll connect with her next on GN. I'm looking at a winter weather advisory from the National Weather Service for Ogle, DeKalb, Kendall, Will, Kankakee, Newton, and Jasper counties in Illinois and northwest Indiana. It includes DeKalb, Oswego, Joliet, Kankakee, Morocco, and Rensselaer. Snow up to 6 inches in some of those areas. And some of you have been telling me you're driving through it and it's no fun. And that winter advisory is on until 7 o'clock this evening. It's 11:27. It's not like that, but I hear it's kind of windy and cold where our Pam Jones is at Union Park at the March for Our Lives rally. Hi, Pam. How's it going?
Hi. It is very cold. In fact, my fingers are so frozen, I didn't know if I was going to be able to answer the phone. the crowd out here is still very enthusiastic. However, the first speakers have already begun to talk to the crowd. We first heard from Cheyenne McQueen, who is an activist on the south and west sides of the city. She called for a change in gun laws. She called for a ban on bump stocks, which are those accessories which turn handguns into machine guns. She called for raising the minimum age to purchase guns. And then she also stirred the crowd with some stories of how gun violence has affected her, saying a student at her school was actually shot and killed earlier this month. We're hearing from many people like her who just have their own stories in addition to what they're seeing across the country, and they want to see the violence stopped across the country, but they also want to see it stopped right here in the Chicago area. Hmm. I also talked to a mom and her 10-year-old son. They were from Chicago Waldorf School, where back in October, a teacher was shot and killed as she was heading to meet friends for dinner. And her husband had to watch that. And they're here just to make sure that that type of thing doesn't happen again here. John?
I hear just in the background some of the cheering and speaking. Is it students that are on the stage right now?
Yes, there are students on the stage right now. And many of them are calling for, you know, lawmakers who don't support changes in law to vote them out. This is a very political issue as well.
Our Pam Jones is in Union Park. Pam, I'm going to pause here. We'll update everybody on the news. Doma T will probably include you in some of that. We'll visit with you again in the next half hour, all right?
Thanks, John.
WGN Radio's Pam Jones at 11:29. Thank you, Doma T. What are we listening to here, Griffin, on Saturdays about this time, 11:39 on WGN? This is John Williams. Producer Griff plays a song for us, something we need to be listening to, and then we rate it on a scale of 1 to 100. It's our Vibe Score segment. What have you got there, Griff?
A little interruption there in the middle. But this is Casey Musgraves, a new song called High Horse.
I love that song. Is that what Casey Musgraves sounds like?
It is now. She's been a country artist in the past. You might remember she had a hit song called Follow Your Arrow. They've got some Grammy attention in her last album a couple years ago. But this is a like pop crossover thing. It sounds a little different.
Yeah, I don't know what she used to sound like, but that sounded pretty good to me. 1 to 100, I'm giving that a 90, and I know she's very excited about that.
Yeah, I give it an 85, but I'm open to raising that the more I hear this song. It just came out.
Wait, what's your gut reaction there, Andy Mazur?
You know, it reminds me of a song I might have played in the early 90s down in Peoria.
Well, that's a bad thing.
Yeah, well, it's got that kind of, you know, poppy crossover, even a little R&B I see it. I kind of feel in there.
Yep. I can see that.
I'm going to go, I'm a little fuddy-duddy. I'm going to go 75.
75. Domiti Pongo doesn't like any of that kind of crap. What do you say, Domiti?
I love it, actually. 95.
95.
It's breezy and easy and fun.
Yeah. It is breezy. It is easy.
Make me smile.
Are you reading from something?
No.
Breezy, easy, and fun? What are you, the blurb on her CD jacket?
Cover girl.
It's the prompter in my heart.
But right, give us something. 1 to 100, Griff. What else are we looking at today?
Cubs and Sox season start in, I don't know, a couple days. Too soon. It's crazy.
All right. Should we make Andy go first or last, since he's the voice of authority on this?
First.
All right, Andy, go first. Okay. Your vibe, 1 to 100 for the Cubs season.
For the Cubs season, I'm probably going to go about 90.
You think they're going to be in the playoffs? You think they're going to be in the World Series?
Yeah, I think they're going to get back to at least the National League Championship game.
All right. White Sox, Andy.
You know, it's a little more tempered, but it doesn't mean that it's not as exciting or will not be as exciting out there. I'm going to go 65.
Yeah. Well, right. Which doesn't mean they're even going to be in the playoffs, but it's going to be fun. Are they going to be better?
I believe that. And, you know, all the people that I've talked to have told me that, you know, the future is very bright. But the future may not be until next year. So it's one of those kind of things where you kind of have to temper your expectations. But again, what you want to see is a little improvement over last year. And I think we'll see that from some of the key players.
Andy's a 90 and a 65. Where are you on this, Griff?
That sounds about right.
I'm a 90 and a 65. See how smart we are?
Yeah, good stuff.
Domiti, where's your heart, man?
I've got nothing on this. You know, I don't even know.
Well, that's right. This is sports.
Yeah, I don't even know who the Cubs are.
You don't even know who baseball are.
Go baseball.
How's a young strapping man like you living in a city with five vibrant professional franchises that ignorant about sports, Domiti?
There are five of them?
All right. Got anything else for us today, Griff?
Sure. The gubernatorial race, not here in Illinois, but in New York, has come to feature Cynthia Nixon.
That's right.
Of Sex and the City fame. What do you think? Is it, you know, a lot of people bristle at these celebrity candidates, but plenty have won in the past, and some people say that she's a different kind of celebrity candidate.
I liked, I know nothing about her issues, position on the issues. I presume she's a Democrat.
Yeah.
I'm going to give her a 92 because she's got that look. She's of a certain age that we respect. You know, she's seasoned. And I hate it when people say, oh, well, those movie stars or that athlete or whatever a person is famous for can't be a politician. We've got run-of-the-mill businessmen and lawyers being politicians. How's that working out for us? I don't mind an Arnold Schwarzenegger or a Ronald Reagan, even a Jesse Ventura. I mean, he was in over his head, out he went. We have a celebrity stars president right now. Let's not judge all of them by that. But in general, I'm okay with it. And when Angelina Jolie speaks to the Congress or the United Nations about some humanitarian issue, these celebrities have the luxury of being so rich that they can devote some of their lives to humanitarian or political causes. I think some of them know as much as you or I. I think they know more than you and I about these things. I'm voting for Cynthia Nixon.
You got to move first.
For governor, I got to move.
But you're into the idea. I'm also sort of on board, too.
Yeah.
And I love Miranda, so Miranda was always my favorite.
For the record, isn't running for governor such a Miranda thing to do?
No, totally. She's a lawyer on TV.
I know so little about that show, really. Was that something Miranda would be the one to do?
I don't know sports, but I know Sex and the City, John. Let me tell you.
Andy, Cynthia Nixon, Governor, go.
I know sports, but I don't know Sex and the City.
Yeah.
Is she the redhead?
Yeah, she's the tall, thin one who's... Yeah.
They're all dumb. Then. Yeah, she's the redhead, yeah.
Okay, redhead. So are we...
Does it matter, Andy?
Well,
she's
not really.
One of them on Sex and the City.
I just wanted to impress you that I knew there was a redhead on that show. So are we talking about just the fact that she's running or the chance she has to win?
Yeah, Griff, what are we talking about?
I think, do you think she got a chance to win? We'll go with that.
Okay. I'll go 75. Because I have no idea.
Well, the idea that a celebrity... fame is, you know, being a TV star, could run for the highest office in the state.
I wonder if people are going to start pulling out, like, bad things that Miranda did on the show and holding it against her. How could you do that to Steve?
I think about that with Oprah. If Oprah ever ran, think of somebody who's lived their life on TV like her. There's nothing but nuggets they could mine from her where she said something inappropriate or awkward or that would be taken out of context, right?
Yeah, but I don't know. That seems to be the norm these days.
Well, you know,
everybody's got a million things you can hold against them.
You know what's just making me crazy is $100 million spent on the gubernatorial race in Illinois by two candidates, and they'll probably spend $200 million more between now and November out of their own pockets. If my dad wanted to be governor... And he said, okay, but it's going to cost me $200-300 million. I would get an attorney, you know. I say, Dad, we're going to have to do an intervention. He'd walk into the room. We'd all be sitting there with some guy with a briefcase, and we'd say, we're going to have you committed. You cannot do that. That's not how we're going down.
So much money to spend on pursuing a job that cannot be fun. No matter what you do, pretty much everyone's going to hate you, I think,
I
anyway.
Yeah, but then he goes, yeah, but it really pays well. No, it doesn't pay well. No, but I could use it for a springboard for... Governor doesn't go anywhere. Yeah, but it's a lot of... No, it's not. Why would you want to be governor?
Power.
It's
but
a nice
what
house.
Is power? I don't know.
Money, if you have $1 billion, you already have everything, right? You could walk into Nordstrom and buy something right now and not even think twice about it.
Maybe he's listening and is going to hear this and then drop out. Oh, yeah. That's such a good point. I'm done.
Memo to self. It's 11:46. Thank you, Producer Griffin. We'll pause here, just get you a quick update on what's happening over at Union Park. Our Pam Jones is there. Also, I want you to call me again with a weather update, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Joe Matisse's been telling you about this winter weather advisory, which might make your head spin if you're near downtown Chicago, where it's cool and cloudy, but not about to snow or rain or do anything, and yet some of you are going through hell. Let me hear about it. 312-981-7200. This is WGN. It's 11:51 now on WGN Radio. 9 minutes more news. That'll include Pam Jones, who's also going to be on with Amy, I believe, a little afternoon as well. Keeping you posted on what's going on. I should say this, Pam, as we go to you just quickly here. I have family and friends that are on their way to the rally, and they're still in their Ubers. I think there's a lot of people who are still trying to get to Union Park. Where are you right now, Pam, and what's happening?
I am standing just near the main stage where a number of teens have taken the stage to tell their own personal stories of violence. I just heard from a young girl who said that her brother was killed by gun violence, shot in the head. There was a young male teenager that was there just before her who said that he witnessed a friend of his get shot and killed on a basketball court. I mean, these teens have lived more life than a lot of adults have in a very unfortunate way. They've witnessed some things that teenagers should not see, and yet they have found the strength to get up on stage and talk about this in order to try to help stop that kind of violence and to bring peace to their communities and also to the nation, John.
Our Pam Jones, Amy Guth is in the studio too, so they'll continue to speak, I presume, from that point, and then the march takes place after the rally, right?
Yes, that is correct. And I mean, it will be very interesting to see how this takes place. There are a lot of people here. You talked about people that you know still on their way here, and I see people lined up who still cannot manage to get inside the field where all the speaking is taking place. So it'll be interesting to see how this proceeds.
Pam Jones from WGN Radio News. Stay in touch, Pam. We'll be listening for you in the news at noon and afterwards with Amy Guth.
Thanks, John.
How frustrating it is. My niece is in an Uber. She goes to school in Kansas. She was in town visiting a friend and said, I'm going to go to the rally, and she's not going to get there in time. Union Park is kind of a funny place for the rally. I mean, it's not an illogical place. They have music fests there, but maybe it doesn't accommodate a really big crowd as well as Grant Park does. You know what I mean?
And that the effects of that are trickling out. Like it was kind of a task to get to work today, and I thought I was cutting it a little close because there's a lot of public transportation, buses and trains that are just packed right now.
People said that were there early, that it was pretty easy to get in. You know, these high school kids, they try and show up at the last minute. And so some of them are still trying to get into the rally that kicked off officially at 11, didn't really get going until after 11:15. It's 11:53 now, and then the march afterwards. You know, in a way, I think the main thing is what you are when you go to a rally is you're just ahead. In the crowd, you're just a body. It's a body count sort of thing. So if you're not there when it starts, but somehow your physical presence was seen, counted, it was in an overhead shot for the newspaper, that's your purpose, is to physically be there. And if you're not there for all of it, or if you miss some of it, I think that's okay. If you're having any traffic problems, or if you're on your way there, if you're there right now listening to us, 312-981-7200. We're about to pause, but I'd let you jump in and just tell us what it's like getting to and from right now. What are you doing on your show this afternoon?
Well, in a perfect segue, actually, we're going to be talking a little bit about Uber and Lyft and how, and then taking a look at traffic data, because indeed, traffic is changing. Congestion is changing a little bit here in this city and in many others. So we're going to be taking a look at that. And we're going to take a look at, there's a move that's kind of unexpected from the maker of Bratz dolls to save Toys R Us stores. Here at the 11th hour, is Toys R Us is having their liquidation sale.
The crowdfunding thing?
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to take a look at that.
I thought crowdfunding was for, like, I'm trying to make a movie, I need $9,000. Not $800 million.
I don't know what movie you can make for $9,000.
You know what I mean? Yeah. No, it's like just, I don't know, maybe I don't understand crowdfunding. I thought they were much smaller projects than, let's save a 1,000-store chain.
Yeah, they're usually a little more of a one-off thing. It's like publish a book, do a thing,
right.
Sort of a clear beginning, middle, end, not save a large corporate entity, which I think the public generally has a little less empathy for doing. And,
well, you know, because really, if say we save Toys R Us, Toys R Us still has to be competitive. What, we're going to have to save it again in a couple of years?
Right. See, that's the thing, because we have to be honest about consumer behavior. We can't force consumer behavior to change once it's changed. That's like unringing a bell. And the retail locations have, we've talked many times on the show about the struggle of retail physical locations versus online shopping behavior.
Still, there's some things that you think you almost do want to be at a brick and mortar location, like a toy.
Right? Sure.
You want to see it, shake it, play with it. I don't know. I haven't bought toys in a long time. But to me, a toy store was the most wonderful place in the world. A website for a toy store, to me, would be a poor substitute for that.
Definitely.
If you can't make it as a brick-and-mortar toy store, am I speaking generationally here, Griffin?
Yeah.
Yes, you are. I'm with you, John.
I hear you, and I agree, but it's the same. It's the same tenor of an argument that you make for any kind of store. Don't you want to be in there and buy the book,
the clothes, in person, and the appliances,
and be able to leaf through it? You could say it for any product, but the numbers don't really reflect it.
I guess not.
Plus, I know a lot of people who will go into a store, play with the thing, try on the clothes, do that, and then go find it online for a discount.
Give me 30 more seconds. What else you got coming up on your show today?
Well, we're going to also be checking in with Pam and seeing the latest. By then, I imagine people will be moving a little bit, and we'll see how that's going. It's interesting to follow this on social media as we're looking at the March for Our Lives hashtag. There's so much going on today everywhere.
Oh, the crowds in Atlanta, obviously in Florida, Washington, D.C., New York, Los Angeles, they're just enormous.
Yeah.
And they had a big one in Schaumburg. I mean, the suburbs have all had their separate ones, too.
Definitely. Definitely. There's one in Champaign-Urbana that I'm seeing a lot from social media there, too. And lots of little kids holding signs, too, of expressing something they want in their classroom or don't want in their classroom.
This is the sort of thing that when I was a kid, my parents would say, hey, we're going to do this. Let's go. You get in the car. Here, the kids are telling mom, hey, yeah, I need a ride. I'm in Downers Grove. I'm 13. I want to go to this rally. Okay. And then the mom. But the kids are the driving force on this one.
Yeah, there's one picture I saw on social media of a little girl saying, I don't want guns in my classroom. And then the dad is holding a sign next to her with an arrow that just said what she said. And I think that sums it up really well.
Amy Guth's after the news. This is WGN.